You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 27 September, less than 3 months to Christmas. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petri Radenhuis, the markets as the bull returns, and Capitec looks to break higher. Dr. Adrian Saville, we're talking rates, when are they going to rise? But also I want to talk around a speech the governor gave maybe a month back. He wants to change the inflation target, bring it lower. Good idea, bad idea, we'll find out from Dr. Adrian Saville. Keith McLachlan talking around avoiding value traps, those stocks that look too good to be true, and then they never go higher. They just stay, I suppose, as deep value. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. NERSA proposing complete overhaul of Eskom price determination, which I thought meant cheap electricity for me. Maybe not. It's moving away, wants to move away from the current revenue-based approach to a cost-to-service approach. And the biggest winners here will be the large power users, the mines, etc., who, of course, are all going off-grid. Business Day, spur chain on a roll as Rocamamas delivers star performance. The burger chain up 12.9% in revenue for the 12 months. That Rocamamas is well positioned for a lockdown, but broadly a good set of results from spur. Morning markets, US was green on Friday, S&P up 0.2, Nasdaq up 0.1. Asia's green, Sydney's up 0.7, and Turkey are up 0.33%. Commodities also coming back over the weekend, looking stronger. Gold, 1,759. Rand, 1,492. Someone broke the Rand while I was away. Top 40, flat open, a slight green open perhaps. And that 10 cent is 1% higher from Thursday's close.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhuis, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. The last couple of times that we have chatted, you've been cautious, bearish on markets, particularly global markets. That kind of came to a head early last week, but the U.S. Markets, S&P bounced strongly, Nasdaq looking good. The bull is back, the bull is strong.
Yeah, bit of a short-lived rout in markets. I think there's obviously still quite a bit of headline, you know, resistance and risks and stuff in the market. But I think over the last sort of couple of days, at least market days, what we've seen is quite a bit, you know, some supporting action from the People's Bank of China, essentially, which is where much of this risk has been coming from. We saw this Evergrande situation really pop up and create quite a bit of fear. You know, around contagion and that kind of stuff, you know, could this lead to another sort of cascading financial crisis? But from what it appears, at least, the Chinese government and the central bank on that side is really doing a good job at sort of making an example of the over-greedy, over-leveraged property developer and not allowing it to spread too much into other sort of sectors. Obviously, I saw a statistic a bit earlier that shows that you know, China has more empty houses than the entire population of Germany, which is insane if you think about it. But you know, we saw some really massive repo action over the weekend, so there's a bit of monetary stimulus and that kind of thing in the system, and that seems to be working. And if you look at markets today, the way that they've started, I mean, oil prices at $78, which is looking really, really good. The Rand, as you mentioned, is not so not so hot. It is slightly stronger on the since we opened, I guess. But equity markets seem to be unperturbed, right? As long as that free money keeps flowing and there's central bank support, whether it be from Europe, the US, or China in this case, you know, markets will stay greedy and stay rallying by the look of things. Yeah, so, and also an interesting sort of note, sorry, just to divert for a second. If you look at sort of institutional fund managers' holdings, you know, but what is their equity positioning like? During this last 2 weeks sort of route that we had, or the pullback that we saw, institutional equity positioning actually increased, right? So that shows that this buy the dip narrative has become so ingrained throughout the entire market that they're not even flinching anymore, man. They're just, if it pulls back, they're buying. So it's almost at record highs, which again, is a worrying signal, but it doesn't mean that the bus stops today.
Yeah, one day that buy the dip doesn't work, but it's worked long enough. And you made a point, a bull market climbs a wall of worry. There's always worry, but you know, right now, and I suppose it helps with $120 billion coming in from the Fed every month. Capitec, a quick point on that, been sort of trading around the 1840 to 19 sort of 15 level, looking like it might break higher and go to all-time highs.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's obviously one of those stocks many love to hate. And it's difficult to short, to be honest with you. It's also one of those stocks that's very tightly held. So finding stock to be able to short it is difficult. And one could argue whether or not that is part of the reason that it has essentially outperformed every other bank over the last couple of years. Well, the last decade or so. But the way the chart looks at the moment, it's a flat top triangle. It looks to be breaking to a new high. And it actually sort of did close above the triggering level on Friday. So that triggers the long trade for today. So what could be a bit of a headwind for it is potentially the Rand that's been considerably weaker. But, you know, we've seen that the stock hasn't really cared too much about the Rand in the past. So if the Rand is a little bit stronger today, which it appears to be at this stage, we are, I think, something like 15 basis points or 20 basis points stronger. I think that's going to be enough of a tailwind combined with the rest of the risk on and bullish sentiment in the rest of the market that Capitec might be able to break the level and trade into a space where there's no resistance.
Yeah, and talk about tight holders. I'm one of those tight holders. I ain't selling my Capitec anytime soon. Petli Radenhuis, founder, Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown.
On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Dr. Adrian Saville, investment investment specialist, Genera Capital. Adrian, appreciate your early morning time this morning. Going back to the MPC on Thursday, unchanged. I think that certainly was expected. It was a consensus vote. Increase in expectation for GDP for this year, that's nice, but next 2 years, not so much. The key point I want to touch on is when do we start to see local rates move higher? The U.S. has kicked that can 100 miles down the road, but there seems to be a bit of consensus around perhaps a November rate increase. Do you buy into that?
Simon, great to be with you. The bond curve, which is a really good place to go to get direction or clues from what capital markets are saying about interest rates. South Africa's bond curve has been indicating for some time that rates have to rise. But, you say the can has been kicked down the U.S. road, not to the same extent, but that certainly applies in the case of South Africa. If we rewind to the earlier parts of this year, there was a overwhelming expectation that we would have by this time in 2021 experienced the first rate hike after the substantial cutting of 2020. That has been delayed because of the weak economic environment, ongoing absence of hiking pressure in big or leading global markets. Mm-hmm. But it is the case that South Africa's inflation is running ahead of yields, and that the so-called Taylor Rule, which is a cocktail of inflation and economic activity components, points to the need for a rate hike in South Africa.
And then talking of that, to slightly change track, a great speech from the governor earlier this month at Stellenbosch University where he talked around inflation targeting. I didn't attend the speech. I read it. He lays out the whole story of the Rand and the Saab and 21 years of inflation targeting. And what he suggests is he's saying, you know, we've had the current 3 to 6%, and he always refers to that 4.5%. He mentions that repeatedly. We've had it for 21 yes. years. He says, time to pull our target down.
Well, you know, if you look at the record and the record and the incredible discipline of mm-hmm. the South African Reserve Bank in breaking the pattern of the double digit inflation that characterized South yeah. Africa's economy in the 1980s, 1990s, even into the early noughties. There were episodes of double-digit inflation, but it has now become very much the norm to expect at midpoint 4.5. We've hung around there for a number of years. You're going to get, I think, substantial pressure from certain sectors or segments if you try to tighten that band or lower that band because of the perception that the discipline on inflation keeps interest rates above where they otherwise would be. And as a result, that makes for tough times for consumers and it keeps investors out of the frame. Now, I don't think that the evidence squares up to that claim, but it won't take away from the fact that you are going to have substantial social and political opposition to any proposals to lower the inflation bands or target.
Yeah, I mean, the target he's proposing is 3%, band 2 to 4%, which means, and a rudimentary as a novice here, last week they would have raised interest rates. I mean, that's partly it. We would have seen
indeed
higher rates. Of course, low inflation. No one doesn't like low inflation, but it is going to be some short-term pain, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think that that's where the evidence needs to be, you know, really translated into a social conversation about what the advantages are of low and stable inflation rates. Mm-hmm. If you want to see social pain, let's go to a world in which you've got double-digit inflation.
Yeah,
and if you look at South Africa's inflation attribute, it is particularly pronounced in administered prices and food prices. And that impacts lowest-income consumers far more than higher-income consumers. The other aspect that is also lost in this conversation is the suggestion that interest rates are starving the economy, or interest rate discipline is starving the economy of investment spending. There's little evidence of that. We can't find any evidence in the work we've done over many years to evidence a relationship between interest rates and investment spending.
We'll leave that there. You can find the speech if listeners are interested on the Reserve Bank website. It is well worth a read. It's a great history lesson and some great thoughts there. That's Dr. Adrian Savoy, investment specialist, Genereo Capital. Our question, our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter: what do you think about changing that inflation target down to the 2 to 4%, 3% the target? You like the idea? You think it'll push rates up? It will in the short term, or perhaps you just think inflation is just like out of control anyway. LinkedIn, Twitter, you can have your say, you can have your vote.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan. He is, of course, Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning. Value trap, something I've been wanting to get you on the show for an age to talk about because I keep on falling into them. I suppose let's first step back and I want to talk about avoiding them. Let's identify them. Fair to say, it's a stock that looks really cheap, oftentimes below net asset value, tangible net asset value. You jump in with both feet. Don Group rings to mind, although now delisted. And truthfully, nothing happens.
So, I mean, the way I'd explain a value trap, Simon, is that really stocks that appear cheap for one or more traditional measures, but they're really not. And what happens is they draw you into that. You buy them because they appear cheap for these reasons. And in fact, what happens is they either at best go nowhere. So you create opportunity costs in your capital where you could have invested it in more productive assets, actually doing something, companies and shares going up, for example. And yet these things meander along. At best, at worst, they actually collapse. Because at some point it runs out of steam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you touched on some of the points. I mean, I do think the way the starting point to identify them is actually with all the traditional metrics. And then you've got to break it down a little bit further and go, why aren't those metrics as important and why is the stock going nowhere?
So that's the point. And I like you, they appear cheap. You know, they tick boxes left, right, and center. And your best case is you just don't make any money. You don't lose, but it's at opportunity cost, as you mentioned. I mean, are there red flags that jump out, or is this something that is sort of deeply complex and probably something that we're going to fall into that trap from time to time?
So the short answer is yes. So let me break it down. I mean, I kind of put value traps into about four different buckets, and all of them are on those traditional metrics. So you get earnings-based value traps where it's really got a low price earnings. And there, the key thing to look for is a company that's growing. If it's not growing, that low price earnings may not, in fact, be an indicator of value. It may just be an indicator of fair value at best. Then you get asset-based value traps, you know, like low-priced books. Now, the balance sheet is based on IFRS. IFRS is not fair value. Auditors don't go around in the background and fair value your company or balance sheet for you. So, like, a good example to look for is a company that's its return on equity is below its cost of equity. And that's an indicator that possibly, just possibly, that book value is actually overstated and the low price to book is misleading. Then you get yield-based value traps. And very similar metrics to the earnings-based one. I mean, consider whether the company is growing or not, because if it's not growing, that yield won't grow. And second of all, more subtly, is consider whether the company's payout ratio is actually sustainable. They could be paying out more of their profits than they should, and they're underinvesting in the background business, which for short periods of time you can hide. It looks really, really great in free cash flows and things like that. But at some point, that business starts deteriorating because it's not being looked after properly. And then the final one, and it's kind of self-explanatory, is consider the turnarounds that never turn around. And there, my starting point would actually be management. If the same management that messed up the company are suddenly turning it around, I would be very skeptical of that. So I'm looking for a strong management change, especially when it's with reinvigorated incentives to drive the turnaround. We want to see action. In the absence of that, this could be a turnaround that never turns around.
Yeah, but most turnarounds don't. We've had a couple that have, truthfully, but most don't, truthfully. But I like your points there. You know, particularly the yield trap, the valuation trap. What we should be looking for, valuation is important, but we need growth. If there's no growth, then that valuation is not useless, but it's going nowhere.
Well, at best, it's misleading. And don't forget, what a valuation really is, and we're talking a lot of relative metrics here, but fundamentally, you're buying a portion of future free cash flows. That's really what you're buying. And are those free cash flows going up or down? Because it's very, very rare that they're staying static. So, growth isn't just a great thing to be invested in. It's actually a quality metric in my mind. Companies should be able to grow, and if they don't, something's wrong.
I like that. It is a quality metric, and I particularly like that point. We're buying future free cash flows, and if that isn't growing, well, then what are we buying? We're jumping into value traps. Keith McLachlan from Integral Asset Management, appreciate your time this morning. That's the show for today. Remember our polls. You can vote on LinkedIn and Twitter and have your say. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app 6.30. 8:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7 on both the website, the app, and of course wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.